Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian, filling in for Chad Millman. We are taping this Wednesday, June 14th. The NBA season, sadly, has come to an end. The Warriors with the gentleman sweep of the Cleveland Cavaliers Monday night. And some interesting stuff to discuss as we welcome in Jeff Sherman, head NBA odds maker at the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. Jeff, good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Doug.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about David Purdom's most recent article on Chalk, ESPN Chalk, about next year. But let's just put a button, or put a bow, I should say, on this NBA Finals. And I want to start with the last basket of the 2016-2017 season, the J.R. Smith, quote-unquote, meaningless three. What impact did that have on the book, given I know the number was all over the place?
Yeah, it varied from sportsbook to sportsbook, but here at the Westgate, we came out a small winner on the game. Most of our support we had from the betting public was on the Cavaliers' money line. So the spread didn't play as large of a role as some people might have thought it would have. We had a lot of money minus 8.5 when it got to 9. That was later in the day, and that was just refunded, basically. But at the same time, we took a lot of Cavaliers' money line wagers. And so even though the game went over, we came out a small winner on the game.
And what was it like in the book, given that there were some 9s and 9.5s out there? J.R. Smith, with about 15, 20 seconds left, down 12, hits a corner 3, and then a dribble-out situation for the Warriors.
Yeah, it's crazy because they even got another easy basket before that. They were down 14, and it seemed like Golden State just started their celebration, really didn't put too much on the offensive end, and the Cavs didn't give up. And you know, when it got to that point, he hit the three. It was a wild celebration on both sides.
Well, let's talk about the final series price, because I know a lot of books, especially with Vegas being more corporate nowadays, you can't really be that aggressive and take risk or take positions. But I saw, like, you as the Westgate were pretty aggressive in favor of the Warriors. You wanted to be on the Warriors' side.
Yeah, we felt that way all year. I mean, when you took the 73-win Warriors of last year and add Kevin Durant to the mix, you know, it felt like there was a wide separation between them and the second-best team, and that being Cleveland. But we stayed high on the Warriors' side, and throughout the whole season took a lot of basically field bets against the Warriors because we had the Warriors up against everyone else at the time. And it put us in a good position going to the playoffs. Once you're in that point and you have the favorite to work with, it's real easy if you need to shorten the favorite and get some large wagers to offset your position. But as long as you're going in with a team that's going to be favored in that position, it's very favorable for the book.
And how did you do as the NBA playoffs as a whole? Because I believe more favorites covered, and that usually spells doom for the books.
Yeah, this was the worst NBA playoffs that I can remember in the 20 years of being in the business.
Wow.
It was just very public heavy with favorite and over. And you know, the one thing we've seen a trend in the last couple of years, and this is in the NFL too, is the public is going away from handicapping the point spread so much and tying their money up in the money line with the better team just to win. And we saw a lot of that throughout the playoffs where they're supporting Cleveland and Golden State just to win their games and tying that with the over. So from that perspective, everyone did a lot better than they had in previous seasons.
How do you see that? More of an anomaly or the public getting a little smarter?
I see a shift happening, and it used to be predominantly on the point spread handicapping, and we've seen a lot more on the money lines. And like I mentioned, you see that in the NBA and the NFL, and I think we're going to be seeing more of that in the future.
All right, so not too many people are going to shed tears for the books, but it is interesting that you guys said it was the worst NBA playoffs for the sports book in the last 20 years. Interesting to see. All right, so let's spin it forward, because Purdom's article talked about the Warriors already at minus 200, and to read your quote, they're going to be the highest favorite we've ever had going into a season, any team in any sport. Why so high on that side?
Well, let me clarify. It's the largest favorite in the four North American sports. I know I put up some European domestic soccer leagues where the German Bundesliga and Bayern Munich would start out as a larger favorite as that. but it's for the four North American ones that we write a majority of our handle on. And the thing with the NBA is you have a few players that affect the team more than any of the other team sports. And so you won't see that in the NFL, baseball, or hockey, where a team's going to start out as an odds-on favorite like it can happen in the NBA. The last time I saw this happen, well, prior to last year's Warriors, after they got Durant, we shifted them to an odds-on favorite. But it was the Bulls coming off their 72-win season when they opened the season as a 4-5 favorite. And those are the only times I can remember having a team in the four major sports that was odds-on prior to the season. And now we're at the largest point with the Warriors at 1-2.
I mean, it makes sense, but as you very well know, there are injuries, and Curry's a free agent this summer. Not that we have any inkling that he could go elsewhere, but you hear the Charlotte grumblings, things like that. How aggressive do you – I mean, let me rephrase that. What kind of handle do you get now in terms of – I'm basically a roundabout question is why put him up now, and why not just wait till you know how the draft and free agency shakes out?
Well, we do it with an anticipation of the draft, what we expect to see, and there isn't too much movement based on that. So even if the Celtics draft folds, we're not going to adjust their odds. It's pretty much built in. But throughout the pre-agency period, we can have them up and just take lower limits than we do after. So we want to give people the opportunity to make wagers when they're out from out of town with the finals just ending and going into next year. But we can do it with lower limits at this time. And then once there's more stability on the teams, then we'll raise our limits.
You hear a lot of Cleveland chatter in terms of whether it be Paul George, even Melo, even CP. A lot of theories. And usually, before the last few years, you would just laugh at those theories. But given that the super team thing, regardless of what LeBron says, has been an issue, nothing's off the table as far as me. When I think of this as a fan, anything goes. So, like, all these theories are certainly on the table. So how do you approach the Cavaliers' future book, given that they could even increase their star roster?
Well, we don't have the conference odds up yet. We'll get that up in the next couple of weeks after the draft is done. But as far as the futures, they're low at 3-1. So if there was some change, given the state of the Warriors, we're expecting them to be the same. There wouldn't be too much alteration in the future pool on Cleveland. And even if we took some early money on them, it wouldn't be anything that would quickly add up some liabilities if they were 20-1,
right?
Say when they were higher even than that, when LeBron came back to the team and we had to drop them rapidly. So they're in such a low region right now that the liability would not add up quickly, and we're comfortable with where we're at.
While we're on the Warriors topic, what do you think will be your season win total come next season? Because that's not up yet.
I think it's going to be something similar to what we had last year. We opened 68.5, got as low as 66.5, and closed 67. We're thinking right now about 67.5. If you go any higher than that, we saw nothing but sharp money under 68.5, 68. You know, there's a tendency for some of those guys to have some nights off. They don't need to push for any records anymore. So we don't need to go too high, and we know where the sharp money is going to be. So right now, if we were to place it, it'd probably be right around 67.5.
And they finished with 67 wins last year, but Durant got hurt in February, missed a bunch of the season. And then also this was a team that, quote-unquote, struggled out of the gates by their lofty standards because they had to incorporate Durant. That took some time. Remember, they blew the game in Cleveland on Christmas Day. So you think you're going to keep it the same even when they're kind of another year more seasoned and familiar with each other?
Yeah, it's such a high number that we will see the sharp money to keep it from going too high. You know, we could go maybe 68.5, but it really wouldn't be much higher than that unless we put it up in that range and then the public played it to even a higher number. But I would expect the Sharps to play it under. They have always played the higher teams under as a tendency, and we'd expect to see that continue even with Golden State.
Yeah, it's hard to play over, whether it be a home run total or just a lot of the season win total over, just given the variable of injuries. You mentioned the draft. Like the NFL, or should I say pro football draft, earlier this year, you guys are being the first to do the NBA draft props, and that's something we've seen offshore over the years, but you're going to be doing it and releasing those numbers this year. What's that experience been like creating that?
Yeah, we did it reflective off what we did for the NFL, and we have certain guidelines that we have to adhere to from gaming. They won't let us do anything with individual players the one difference between our experience with the NFL and now to the NBA, we could do position props for the NFL, such as number of quarterbacks in the first round. We don't have that ability with the NBA. So we did 8 propositions, and they're centered around collegiate teams and how many players would be drafted from those schools, such as UCLA. We have 2.5 over $5 for players drafted in the first round. We're expecting 3, but we're just not going to hang the 3 number because it seems like it'd be a push. So we're trying to do a high price to get some action. Things like that. We did some comparisons, Indiana against South Carolina for most players drafted. But those are the type of propositions that you're going to see in Las Vegas, or some simple school propositions.
Now, are you the only book that's doing it?
No, there's a few more that have it up right now, and I'd anticipate that come draft week next week that you'll see most of them have it up.
And how did that go down? Did you have to petition the
Nevada
Athletic or Nevada Gaming?
Yeah, one of the books has to petition the gaming and give some guidelines, and it's up to gaming to approve the parameters of what we can take. And so once one book does that and gaming approves it, then it's open for the other books. And then prior to us hanging them numbers, we just have to submit our propositions to gaming for them to review. Then they'll give us the okay on them.
So what happened recently that prevented this from happening, I don't know, 10 years ago?
It's just more forward thinking. I know gaming's taken the stance with the direction that fantasy is going, and the potential for beyond Nevada in the near future, that they just wanted to be more aggressive and give us the opportunity to do things and think outside the box. We can't do anything with elections or award shows or anything like that. It has to be involving sports right now, but they've been flexible and trying new things out. And hopefully each year it'll progress to a better point.
Right. So what's the, midterm instead of long-term versus short-term, what's the midterm sort of goal? Do you want to do elections? Do you want to do bachelor, bachelorette kind of stuff?
We'd love to do anything that we're allowed to do. Elections would be huge. I know over a 4-year election period, we'd end up writing more on that than we would on any Super Bowl. The potential's there. I know they do it in Europe, so the experience that I've heard over there is phenomenal with their politics. And if we had the opportunity to do that, it would be huge over here.
All right, so we'll table that for now, but that's very interesting. And, maybe you guys can be like Kramer and Seinfeld in terms of just a bet on the airplanes coming in when they're going to land at the airport.
Yeah, if we could, we would.
All right, let's continue the draft prop discussion in just a moment. Let's take a break. Welcome back to Behind the Bets podcast. We're speaking with Jeff Sherman, head NBA odds maker at the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. Westgate will post draft props this coming weekend. And you mentioned UCLA 2.5 over minus 500. So you're obviously Lonzo Ball. And then you're thinking TJ Leaf will be the swing vote because there's one other guy, right?
Yeah. I could never pronounce his name. Yeah. Ike Igan.
I think it's a Nigbogu or something like that. So,
yes.
And what kind of handle are you going to take on that? What's like a max bet?
We take 1,000 on it. And we actually wrote some decent volume on the NFL ones. And like I mentioned, I think it's going to be a little bit less on this because if we had an opportunity to say, number of point guards taken, like we did quarterbacks, I think it's something simple that would attract more. But just with the schools themselves, it's a little bit more thought process, just as if during the finals when we do propositions, we like to put up points by LeBron. When you combine things and put points plus rebounds plus assists, it tends to write a little bit less because there's just more handicapping involved. So the simpler we can keep it, the more handle we'll expect to see.
And along the lines of keeping it simple, you can't do something like will Markelle Fultz be number one overall? Yes, no, because you have to keep it more generic.
Yeah, we're not allowed to do anything with specific players. It has to be involving more than one player that can be accounted for in the proposition. So hence we end up doing with schools.
So you've done schools, you've done head-to-head schools, and what else?
That was it. We did over-under number of players picked in the first round by certain schools, over-under number of players picked in the entire draft by certain schools, and then more players picked between two schools in the entire draft. So basically three variations.
All right, good stuff. And just as we put a bow on everything on this podcast, going back to the finals, we had some solid ratings numbers. How did the handle, overall handle, compare to other NBA finals?
Hanna was exceptional. It keeps getting greater every year. And when you see that, typically the ratings are up, the handle's going to be up. It's worked like that in all the sports. I'll give you an example with the soccer. There's so much soccer available on television now that it drives our handle up. The more that we can show and take bets on it, and it's done so with the NBA Finals, the more viewership, the more handle, and the more betting opportunities that we try to create leads to that too. Plus, with the phone apps readily available in Nevada, that's another avenue that has helped enhance the handle.
And so moving forward with this increased handle and how you think there's been a shift with money lines and stuff like that, what do you think, how do you think that will impact how you create the odds and book next season?
Well, it's going to be, at least we have the experience going into next year with what we dealt with Golden State this year and to a lesser extent Cleveland. So we're going to take that. And, you know, once you get up to the high spreads with Golden State at home, when they're up there 16 to 18 point favorite, you see a lot less money on those games. The public will get more involved when Golden State's laying between 3 and 7 on the road. It seems more manageable for them. So we'll have higher handle on those type of games than we will on their higher home games. But just through the experience of last year, we know what we're looking towards next year, and it won't be as much of an unknown with a team like this.
And you said you'll have more, you know, you have obviously a foundation to reference, but if you could have done one thing differently in this NBA postseason, what would it have been done? What would that be?
In the postseason, we probably would have been a little bit more aggressive moving the spreads. You know, we kept in line with the market a little bit, and we did stay ahead of it, but that happened later in the playoffs, and there was such an influx of public money that it would have been nice if we would have been more aggressive earlier in the playoffs to get some of that money back against these teams that did so well. So that's another thing that we can take next year is when they get so popular like that, just be a little bit ahead of it and deviate off market a little earlier if we're going to start seeing trends like we did with the favorite and over this time.
Now, give me an example. Well, first of all, is that public money or public sharp? Public, you know, why did you think you made that mistake, I guess, is the way I'm asking.
Well, it was predominantly public money, and we let the public play to within the market, and the sharps drive the market price. So as long as the price is sitting there, you know, we'll move a half point, a point off market, but sometimes that's not enough to get what you're looking for back. And that's what we found out later in the playoffs is we might have had to move a point and a half off market to get exactly the position we were looking to be in. And so that's something that I can take into next year is just a little bit more aggressiveness during the playoffs on the extremely public teams on where you need to deviate off market to get what you're looking for, because staying within a half a point to a point didn't necessarily get as much as we had hoped for.
But doesn't that leave you vulnerable to a middle?
It can, but, you know, it happens in college basketball and the NFL. You know, those happen all the time. But sometimes when you move it like that, you'd be surprised that the public can still lay the favorite, even if it's a point and a half off market. And you might end up seeing two-way on it, too, at that time. So your middle isn't as pronounced as it might have been as if you just went off and immediately got an influx of sharps coming against it.
So this is interesting. So you are now thinking that you should have moved the number more synonymously, for lack of a better word, with the public, because in the past you just let the public do it and think they're going to lose in the long run. So you think you should have moved more with the public in this postseason?
Well, we could have been a little bit more aggressive early with it. You know, okay. We did that, like I mentioned, later in the playoffs, and you know, it's a situation to situation specific, but just that when you see a role like going on in these playoffs where it's predominantly favored to over, then we can do things a little bit differently next time around with a team that we're dealing with in the beast that they are with the Warriors.
So like in Game 7, if you're getting a bunch of action at 8, 8.5, you can move it earlier to 9, 9.5 because you still think the public's going to play that number.
Yeah. The interesting thing when the Warriors play the Cavaliers, we saw plenty of Cavalier support right in that series. It was mostly the series prior to the finals that we saw Cavalier support, Warrior support that really outweighed their opponents.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. We'll live and learn, but I think that's the most compelling comment of the podcast. Worst NBA playoffs I can remember in the last 20 years. So finally, the book has to do, or finally the book has to take one on the chin once in a while.
Yeah, oh, it's going to happen, and the players have some money, and now we've got the NBA Summer League approaching, which will have wagering lines on that, and it seems like there's no off season anymore, so it's basketball all year.
Interesting stuff. Well, Jeff, we appreciate your taking the time and obviously pulling back the curtain a little bit and letting our listeners know what goes on behind the scenes. Obviously, you guys are being pretty aggressive with Westgate in terms of the draft props. Exciting stuff, and interesting to see how it all turns out.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for having me on, Doug.
You got it. Jeff Sherman, head NBA odds maker at the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. That's going to do it for this Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian, filling in for Chad Millman, and we'll catch you next time on the next Behind the Bets podcast.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.